Let me read the story from you. It's from Matthew chapter 2. Just in case it's not that familiar. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men came from the east, came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose, and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him." After listening to the king, they went on their way, and behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. This is the word of the Lord. Did you know that the story of the Magi appears in Matthew alone? One might well wonder why the other three gospel writers left it out. One might well wonder why Matthew thought it important enough to include. Commentators on the English Standard Version Study Bible inform us that Matthew had crafted his gospel to demonstrate three primary messages to his readers: Jesus' messianic identity, his inheritance of the Davidic kingship over Israel, and his fulfillment of the promise made to Abraham. So Matthew begins his gospel with a genealogy linking Jesus to the kingly line of David. In fact, one of his favorite phrases is "son of David," Jesus, son of David. And if also the covenant promise through Abraham that all nations would be blessed through his seed. Jesus is clearly the seed of Abraham. Through Jesus, though in his own words he came to the house of Israel, through Jesus, all nations were going to be blessed. Isn't it interesting then that Matthew includes a story of magi from the east, foreigners from other nations? Is it any wonder also that Matthew closes his gospel with what we have come to entitle the Great Commission? "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age." Now, two things we should know about this story in order to understand the initial impact it may have had on its readers. And the first has to do with the term magi. From this word, we get our word magic. Did you know that? From this word, magi, we get our word magic. These wise men from the east were considered to include a wide range of people whose practices included astrology, astronomy, dream interpretation, the study of sacred writings, the pursuit of wisdom, and magic. Deuteronomy 18:9-14 tells us, that the practice of divination and interpretation of omens was a practice of other nations, and the Israelites were told this was an abominable practice, and that they were forbidden to practice these practices. It was considered abominable. So isn't it interesting that Matthew, who wrote to a Jewish audience as well as Gentile, would include such a possibly inflammatory story? The second thing we should know, and I'm sure many of you do know this, is the fact that other nations were not a high priority on any list of average Israelite. These goyim, these non-Jews, these other nations, we often translate the word Gentiles, were not considered part of the chosen of God. These were outsiders. Unless we be too harsh on the average Israelite, we cannot forget that even Jesus spoke harsh words to the Canaanite woman. It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Of course, we lose something when we read the printed page. We lose nuance. We lose voice inflection. So it makes me wonder, was Jesus being an average Israelite, or was he trying to make the point that the Israelites had too long considered Gentiles as dogs and had forgotten that they had been given the responsibility of being a light to the nations? What had they done instead? Well, they had kept to themselves the precious gift of being the chosen children of God. Is there a lesson for us to learn from this? One can only imagine then how this story of Goyim, Magi coming from the east and falling on their faces to worship the child Jesus, one can only imagine how it was taken. Especially when one considers John's gospel and his early words in chapter 1, where he wrote, "He came to his own, and his own received him not." Imagine what it meant to the first readers to hear that foreigners had bowed to worship the Christ child. Foreigners had recognized him as the King of the Jews. How would you feel if someone said to you, "Well, you people claim to know Jesus. You claim to follow him as his disciples, but you fall so short. Even a drunk on the street will share his bottle with another drunk. But what did you do for the poor this Christmas?" Ouch. That hurts, doesn't it? I may be a little different, but I think we need to get the message that Matthew is trying to convey to his first readers, don't you? I mean, this isn't just a nice story about kings from the Orient. It had a context, and it has a context for us as well. And my prayer is that the Spirit of God will show us individually and corporately just what it should mean for us. Wise men came from the east. So one of the first things we notice about these wise men is that they are goyim. They are outsiders. They travel from their home in the east, perhaps as much as 800 miles. The main trade route from Babylon, which is where they think that these Magi came from, was about 1,288 kilometers. And if they were able to average on their camels about 32 kilometers a day, it would have taken them about 40 days. Over a month, they traveled to find a baby they believed would be the King of Israel. They had seen his star from their home in the east and had come to worship him. Imagine such devotion. Imagine such stamina to travel 40 days, probably on the back of a camel, to worship a child. Now, I've heard people complain about driving to Toronto. I've heard people complain about a 5-hour flight. Everything is so fast today. And we have grown so accustomed to it that it's never fast enough, is it? Try sending someone a picture from your high-speed internet when they have dial-up. So are we not impressed by the fact that outsiders came so far to worship the Messiah of Israel, when the Israel in which Jesus is born seems to miss the event? A few shepherds, maybe the owner of the stable, but other than that, few knew what was happening right under their noses. But isn't that the way it is sometimes? We seem to be so impressed with what is happening in other parts of the world, but are unaware of what is happening right here in Prince Albert. I was really impressed with our reach team this year when they decided to focus their efforts right here in Prince Albert rather than spend another $40,000 on a foreign mission trip. Now, please don't get me wrong. I believe we need to go out as well. Jesus said that, didn't he? Go make disciples of all nations. We may be Gentiles, but we are the new Israel, the church. We are to be the light to the nations. But we have nations right here, right among us. What we may have once regarded as outsiders are living right here in Prince Albert. Speaking of outsiders, Jeremy Bell, our executive minister of the Canadian Baptists of Western Canada, wrote an interesting story last week in his News and Notes on Christmas Eve. He wrote of the images of outsiders with what he had been struck by. Not the little match girl from Dickens who looks out from the outside but cannot come in. Not Leonardo DiCaprio in The Tin Man as the rejected child who through the cold and the snow looks in at the family gathering at Christmas that he cannot participate in. Not even the outsiders Mary and Joseph who could not find a home for the night but only a stable. No, Jeremy was thinking of a simple story told to an interview of a Red Cross worker from Sri Lanka. Recalling the aftermath of the tsunami that hit 5 years ago this past Boxing Day, the worker spoke of a Sri Lankan man whose house had been rebuilt. Oh, and such a house it was. He had never lived in such a house. He and his family had never expected to live in such a magnificent, monsoon-proof house that would last from generation to generation. He had one problem. He could not enjoy this gift unless he was outside looking at it. So he continued to live in the little lean-to hovel that he had lived in since the tsunami, because it was the only way he could see his house. How many people do you know? How many of you sitting here right now or watching this service from your home have even considered that you may be this kind of outsider? It's not that you are on the outside looking in at what you cannot have. It's not that you have been rejected by the church and refused to have anything to do with it anymore. You have been invited in. You may know quite well that the invitation to come to Jesus has been given time and time again. You have wanted to answer that invitation. Perhaps you have answered that call. Perhaps you have received God's greatest gift to you, but you still think of yourself as unworthy of the gift. You could never live in such a magnificent dwelling as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. It is so sad that there are people outside looking in at what they want and have not yet heard the invitation to come in. But it is a tragedy when one has received the gift and cannot enjoy it from within. I hope this Christmas season you will reconsider as you think about how you once asked Jesus to come into your heart. Hear his plea to you to come into his. He has made a home for us to live in, not remain outside looking at it. The last thing we really know about the Magi in Matthew's story is that they left their gifts with Jesus and then departed. They went home. And we might not think that's so strange. After all, Palestine was not their home. They were probably from Iraq or Iran. They really were goyim, non-Jews. They paid homage. They fell down and worshiped Jesus. They offered their treasures and their gifts. And then they went home. How many of us have done just that? We come, we cry, we watch, we wait, we look, we long for Jesus, just as we sometimes sing that Steve Bell song. Then we have our coffee and our fellowship, and we go home. And the rest of the week, we are very busy. We have our work, we have our family to look at, we have our friends and hobbies and activities, we have our lives. Our lives. It's true, isn't it? I'm not just saying this to make us all feel guilty. I live it every week. Sure, my work is often the work that God has given me to do, but to be perfectly honest, I struggle with those words of Paul, "I am crucified with Christ, and I no longer live." I can't always say, "Christ lives in me." I can't always say, the life that I live by faith in the Son of God, because sometimes I live by my own strength. Sometimes I live by my own logic and reason, not faith. I still have my life. And don't you? To be perfectly honest, don't you too? We all have our homes to go home to. We do bow down and worship. We do offer our treasures and gifts. But then we go home. I wonder how the Magi were changed. We don't know. But T.S. Eliot offers this poem in Speculation. And perhaps it is a reminder to us of what coming to the Christ child can mean for us. All this was a long time ago, I remember, and I would do it again, but set down this, were we led all that way for birth or death? There was a birth, certainly. We have evidence, and no doubt I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death. What does the birth of Jesus mean to you today? Are we going to just come to him once again and sing, "Oh, come to my heart, Lord Jesus, there is room in my heart for thee," and then go home? How will we be changed? Will we eventually come to realize that coming to Jesus means more than giving him gifts? Will we come to realize that receiving him as God's great gift to us means living in him, not looking at him from the outside? Perhaps, and this is my prayer for us all, we will come to him as the young boy Misha did back in 1994. Two Americans had answered an invitation from the Russian Department of Education to teach morals and ethics based on biblical principles in the public schools. They were invited to teach in prisons, businesses, both fire and police departments, and in a large orphanage. Living in this orphanage were about 100 girls and boys who had been abandoned, abused, and left in the care of a government-run program. In their own words, they relate the following story. It was nearing the holiday season, 1994, time for the orphans to hear for the first time the traditional story of Christmas. We told them about Mary and Joseph arriving in Bethlehem. Finding no room in the inn, the couple went to a stable where the baby Jesus was born and placed in a manger. Throughout the story, the children, the orphanage staff, sat in amazement as they listened. Some sat on the edges of their stools, trying to grasp every word. Completing the story, we gave the children three small pieces of cardboard to make a crude manger. Each child was given a small paper square cut from yellow napkins I had brought with me, for no colored paper was available in the city. Following instructions, the children tore the paper and carefully laid strips in the manger for straw. Small squares of flannel cut from a worn-out nightgown an American lady was throwing away as she left Russia were used for the baby's blanket. And a doll-like baby was cut from tan felt that we had brought from the United States. The orphans were busy assembling their mangers as I walked among them to see if they needed any help. All went well until I got to one table where little Misha sat. He looked to me to be about 6 years old, and he had finished his project. As I looked at the little boy's manger, I was startled to see not one, but two babies in the manger. Quickly, I called for the translator to ask him why there were two babies in the manger. Crossing his arms in front of him and looking at his completed manger scene, the child began to repeat the story very seriously. For such a young boy, who had only heard the Christmas story once, he related the happenings accurately. Until he came to the part where Mary put the baby Jesus in the manger. And then Misha started to ad lib. He made up his own ending to the story as he said, "And when Maria laid the baby in the manger, Jesus looked at me and asked me if I had a place to stay. I told him, 'I have no mama, I have no papa, so I don't have any place to stay.' Then Jesus told me I could stay with him, but I told him I couldn't because I didn't have a gift to give him like everyone else. But I wanted to stay with Jesus so much. So I thought about what I had that maybe I could use for a gift. I thought maybe if I kept him warm, that would be a good gift. So I asked Jesus, 'If I keep you warm, will that be a good enough gift?' And Jesus told me, 'If you keep me warm, that will be the best gift anybody ever gave me.' So I got in the manger. And then Jesus looked at me, and he told me I could stay with him for always." As little Misha finished his story, his eyes brimmed full of tears that splashed down his little cheeks. Putting his hand over his face, his head dropped to the table, and his shoulders shook as he sobbed and sobbed. The little orphan had found someone who would never abandon or abuse him, someone who would stay with him for always. Jesus came to give himself to us and for us. He doesn't need our treasures and gifts. He doesn't want us to just go back home when we are done with him. Jesus wants us to give ourselves to him. He invites us to stay with him, walk with him, learn from him, live in him. And he promises that he will never leave us or forsake us. We can stay with him for always. Amen.